So we have journeyed with Moses for many miles. We began with him nestled among the cattails of the Nile River, his mother fighting for his survival. We've heard of his posh life in Pharaoh's palace, being treated to the best Egypt had to offer, which really was the best in the world. We shook our heads as he attacked the slave driver and buried him in the sand. We watched him become a fugitive as he ran out of Egypt and right into a burning bush. And we perked up our own ears as we listened to God lay out his plan for Moses. We shook our head again, this time at Pharaoh's stubbornness, as the plagues from God broke a national leader. And we hesitantly marched through the riverbed with the entire nation of Israel, amazed at the water stacked up on both sides of the river. And we worshiped a powerful, delivering, promise-keeping God on the other shore. Then we grew restless and tired and impatient and even a little bit judgmental as we saw Israel trudge around the desert, complaining and whining and griping every step of the way, in our hearts only wishing for a sign like they lived with every day. We were shocked at the thoughts of worshiping a cow. We covered our heads when the stone tablets were broken, and we agreed these people need to humbly repent at the foot of Mount Sinai. We've learned that God doesn't forget his children and that deserts are a furnace of transformation. We've learned God sees more in us than we see in ourselves. We've learned God takes complaining and ingratitude seriously. We've learned there's no room for envy in God's kingdom. We've learned that it's good to say no sometimes. And we've learned that you're never too old to fail. So we've traveled many miles with this man of God. And today we stand on the edge of Moses' destination, Canaan, you know, the promised land. And Moses knows he won't be marching into the land at the front of the nation. Instead, he'll only get a visual tour from this mountaintop. And he knows that his days are numbered. So Deuteronomy is a collection of departing words from a dying leader. And I want to share with you a few recurrent themes Moses, he can't seem to stop talking about as we wrap up our study of Moses. He tells the people of Israel to follow God's commands, not other gods. He tells them to remember their pilgrimage, to fear the Lord, and he tells them to choose life. You see, at the end of life, the things you say are probably the things that are most important to you, the things that matter most. And I believe Moses' last words are relevant to us, even several thousand years past his death. So here's the first message I want you to see. Moses tells the Israelites to follow God's commands and live. Read a couple of texts from Deuteronomy 5 and then also chapter 28. Walk in the way that the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live and prosper and prolong your days in the land that you will possess. If you will fully obey the Lord your God and carefully follow all his commands that I give you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations on earth. However, if you do not obey the Lord your God and do not carefully follow all his commands and decrees I'm giving you today, all these curses will come upon you and they will overtake you. And the Lord will send on you curses and confusion and rebuke and everything you put your hand to until you're destroyed and come to sudden ruin because of the evil you've done in forsaking him. So as you can hear, full obedience is a high priority to God. Following his direction is critical for us to experience life. So I want you to think about this. You know, how do you go about following directions? Are you a good direction follower when those kind of moments come up? My father trained me a little differently than the principle Moses offered. His move, when he had some directions to follow and putting something together particularly, he put things together the way he thought they should go. And then he made a good guess with any remaining parts left over. And finally, when all else fails, he would what? Read the directions. So maybe some of you are like that. And he could get away with that because he just knew how things went together. But I'm not that good. I'm much more OCD than he was. I'm the guy who not only reads all the directions, but I lay all the parts out in front of me. I sort them by size. I count and make sure that's what's all supposed to be there before I ever even put anything together. So I'm kind of all in on Moses with this one. Following directions is a good thing. Remember with me the day Moses met God at the burning bush in Exodus 3, verse 12. God said to Moses, I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Don't miss when God's affirmation that he had sent Moses was going to come. He says it's going to come after Moses obeyed, not before. He says the signs will come when you have brought the people out of Egypt. And isn't it true for you that affirmation most often comes after obedience, not before? God invited Moses to join him in delivering Israel, and he said, down the road, you and all of Israel will worship me on this same mountain. For the past 2 months, we've been studying 1 John on Wednesday nights, and there's a text which fits in here, which we looked at recently. It's in 1 John chapter 2, verse 3. We know that we've come to know him if we obey his commands. The man who says, I know him, but does not do what he commands, is a liar, and the truth isn't in him. But if anyone obeys his word, God's love is truly made complete in him. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must walk as Jesus did. John and Moses really couldn't make this any clearer. If you're on God's side, you'll obey him. Now, you already know what I'm about to say is true, but here it goes anyway. When you're obedient, it sometimes costs you. In the marketplace, it might cost you a few clients, or even your job, in the worst case, sometimes. In your family, you may feel left out. Others have different standards. Others engage in different conversations. They kind of hold different attitudes. And even in church, those who are totally sold out to obedience, they're sometimes talked about, maybe labeled as fanatics. The family who's thrown out the TV, you know, you kind of listen to them talk about that and say, oh, that's a great idea, but you walk away thinking, that's not normal. It's not normal. And the family whose only vacation is to the inner city or to an Indian reservation or to Haiti instead of Disney or the beach or the mountains, you know, what do you really think or maybe even say about that level of obedience? We encourage obedience in church within reason, within traditional boundaries, within each of our comfort zones. Some of you are old enough to remember a guy named Stanley Shipp. Stanley was a minister in St. Louis when I came to know him, and he was a kind of a go-to resource in the world of campus ministry. And many moons ago, Stanley was encouraging some of our university students at a retreat that we attended, and he told us that one day, kind of casually in conversation, he said to someone, I would never want to go or live in Calcutta. He just made that statement. And on his way home that day, what he said really hit him pretty hard, and he was convicted. So when he walked into his home, he told his wife to pack up. They had to go to Calcutta because that's the one place he told God he didn't want to go. And he knew if he was to be obedient, he had to go. How could he ever tell God where he wouldn't go? What is it that's tough for you to obey? You know, for Israel, it was trusting God every day for food and for water. But, you know, are you all in with obeying the Lord? Or are there some areas in your life which are kind of off limits? I've talked about going to the Philippines before, been a few times now. And to be honest, a simple desire to be obedient is why I go. Those of you guys who know me, I'm not big on world travel. I don't get fired up about experience in a new culture. Kind of a homebody. Just rather kind of stay around here. But when Mark Van Dyke asked, I said yes, because I believe this is what God wanted me to do. And it was a humbling experience, and it still is. I was free to say no, but how could I if that seemed to be what God had planned for me? Moses says, obey God and live. Another principle Moses keeps telling the Israelites is this, do not worship other gods. This is in Deuteronomy 13, verse 6. Now, I'll give you a warning. This section of Moses' message is a little hard to hear. If your very own brother or your son or daughter or the wife you love or your closest friend secretly entices you, saying, let's go and worship other gods, gods that neither you nor your fathers have known, gods of the people around you, whether near or far, from one end of the land to the other, do not yield to him or listen to him. Show him no pity. Do not spare him or shield him. You must certainly put him to death. Your hand must be the first in putting him to death, and then the hands of all the people. Stone him to death because he has tried to turn you away from the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Then all Israel will hear and be afraid, and no one among you will do such an evil thing again. So on a scale of 1 to 10, How serious would you say God is about idolatrous influences in our life? About a 15, seems like. In verse 6, the word that catches my eye is the word entice. That's a great word because it's so true. We're enticed every day to follow other gods. We're enticed to save our money in this account for security or to drive that car for luxury or to wear this brand to be attractive. And we have the gods screaming at us and tugging at us and grabbing our heart and mind, trying to hypnotize us, singing the song, Trust in Me, like the serpent in Jungle Book. He sings to Mowgli, you know, trust in me. He's got those big googly eyes going on. I mean, we are the target of a violent and aggressive pursuit for attention and for our worship. The God who delivered Israel is in one corner, and the father of all lies and accusations, is in the other. And don't be fooled. Don't be lethargic. Don't be tricked into compartmentalizing your life. Your affection for God and your pursuit to be like Jesus is a primary factor in almost every decision that you make. Who will get your affection with this next purchase? Who will get your affection in this next conversation? Who will get your affection as the next conflict heats up? Who will get your affection when the next attractive person passes by? Who will get your affection when your schedule is interrupted or when things don't go your way? Who will get your affection? Will God be worshipped in your decision, or will the demons be worshipped with the choice that you make? Moses says, don't be influenced by evil, by your brother, your son, your daughter, your wife, your husband, your closest friends, and maybe we need to add the media and public opinion polls and the majority, the minority, our government, and maybe especially your feelings. Moses has witnessed way more than his fair share of idolatry among God's people. One time, the influence was even his own brother. And Moses said, stone to death the influences that try to turn you away from God. Another recurrent message from God's leader in his last words is in chapter 6, remember your pilgrimage. When the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, a land with large, flourishing cities that you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things that you did not provide, wells that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. Then when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Moses knew Israel must remember. Much of Deuteronomy is a recanting of what God has done for Israel. And notice this, Israel is not encouraged to remember ideas and concepts about God, but to recall specific acts that he's done in their lives. Moses wants them to remember details, details about the plagues, details about their deliverance, details about the Exodus and the wilderness. Memory is critical to a life of faith. Lapses of memory are what cause so many problems for them. When you forget what God's done, soon you begin to whine and gripe, and eventually you're bowing at the feet of a golden calf because you forgot. Daniel Taylor, in his book, The Myth of Certainty, writes this sentence that I like. Faith derives from a relationship, not a set of beliefs. And a proper use of memory reminds us that, help me out, God has been trustworthy. That's the main reason we need to hear testimonies of men and women who've been changed by Jesus. I really miss what we had going on with our men at Meet and Meet, you know, once a month before we had to pull the plug, because that was a time for us to hear what's gone on in our lives, what God has done for us and in us and around us. And I mean, we need stories of God's faithfulness in our lives, always playing. Testimonies of God's specific acts are faith building, and they feed our memory, giving me one more reason to believe when unbelief seems so much easier. In 1 John 1, listen to how John opens up his letter written to a few churches around Ephesus. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our own hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared, and we've seen it and testified to it. And we proclaim to you the eternal life, which was with the Father and has appeared to us. We need to remember what we've seen and heard and touched. Paul is continually urging believers to remember where they came from. He said, I'm the chief of sinners. And he never forgot that he was dead in sin And he never forgot that God was the one who made him holy. Hebrews 11 is kind of like the Hall of Fame chapter. And we read in that chapter how by faith Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph, how they each experienced God's presence in their lives. And this chapter is all about remembering, because without a memory, faith may be impossible. Besides the memory I've established through God's work in his kingdom, I also have memories of my personal encounters with him. I know how I used to be, what used to catch my eye, what used to tug at my heart, what used to be my goals. And I've felt things from God that I can't explain. And I've spoken words about God to others that weren't my words. And I've acted on compassion that didn't come any place from within me. And I've been changed against my own will sometimes. And I've had the very best of mentors and the best of friends when I've not been the best of either. I've been encouraged at just the right moment, challenged just before the mistake, and provided for when the well was dry. God has been giving me specific things to remember for years, things that he's done in my life. My memory should be used to energize the present. I don't need to catalog memories of God's work like artifacts in a museum. These memories energize anticipation of God doing something new today in the present, something I could never imagine. The author who was writing of his memories in Hebrews 11 was not content just to provide an index of memories. This author was solely interested in motivating faith and action. Here's what he says at the beginning of chapter 12 after he goes through all of these memories. Therefore, because of all the things that we know that God has done in people's lives, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Remember the cloud of witnesses, but also remember Jesus. Never forget what Jesus has done for you. I know God has given you the opportunity for faith-shaping and faith-building memories. Remember where you were. Remember the journey you've been on to get where you are, and especially remember the one who has brought you this far. The next command Moses emphasizes is deeply embedded throughout Deuteronomy, and it's these three words: fear the Lord. I'm going to read from chapter 10. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God ask of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and decrees that I'm giving you today for your own good. To the Lord your God belongs the heavens, even the highest heavens, the earth and everything in it. Fear the Lord your God and serve him. Hold fast to him and take your oaths in his name. He is your praise. He is your God who performed for you those great and awesome wonders you saw with your own eyes. Fear of God seems kind of old-fashioned, maybe, to many people. There was a time when a believer might have been known as a God-fearing man or a God-fearing woman. But that's just not a phrase you hear much anymore. So I wonder, why would Moses talk so much about fearing God in his departing speech? The Bible uses the phrase fear of God in two distinct ways. You've got anxious dread, and then you have reverence and awe. And we know a lot about anxious dread. It's the feeling you get when you forget your anniversary again, and you come home to a quiet house, and there are no children running around, and you see candles on the table, and dinner steaming, and Barry Manilow, of course, crooning in the background, and you're feeling some dread, some anxious dread, because you forgot again. Adam felt anxious dread when he'd been caught hiding with a mouthful of fruit. And that's not the kind of fear Moses is talking about here. He's speaking about honor and reverence and awe. The fear we have for someone so splendid and overwhelming, we can't help but bow in their presence. Listen to these words again. To the Lord your God belong the heavens, even the highest heavens, the earth and everything in it. He is your praise. He is your God who performed for you those great and awesome wonders you saw with your own eyes. He has done amazing works of power in your presence for your sake. fear the Lord. The last word from Moses I want to highlight is in chapter 30, verse 11 through 16. And he tells me to choose life. Now, what I'm commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It's not up in heaven so that you have to ask who will ascend to heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it. Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask who will cross the sea and get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it. No, the word is very near you. It's in your mouth and in your heart so you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God and walk in obedience to him and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. And then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. Verse 11 through 14 are some of my favorite words in Deuteronomy. Moses tells us that we can understand God's message, and he sets it in our hearts. God sets before you and me today, just like he did yesterday and like he will tomorrow, he sets before us a choice. You can choose life through Jesus, through obedience, through loyalty to him, by remembering who's brought you here today, or you can choose death and destruction through whining and complaining, through distrust in the Lord, through envy or uncontrolled anger, through selfishness. We have the opportunity to make life and death choices more often than we realize. We can either encourage or destroy a friendship with a few carefully chosen words or with a few quick-tempered words. We can either embroil or extinguish a heated situation with our choice of attitude. We can either mature or become stale through a choice to spend time with God or not. We can feed our heart or poison our heart with our choice for entertainment. We can be real or be fake, depending on what we choose to do when no one is looking. We can choose forgiveness or vengeance when someone hurts us. We can choose selflessness or selfishness when someone needs help. We can be generous or greedy when we make choices about our money. We can live or die when we make a choice about Jesus. Moses does have one more vital departing message for Israel. In fact, this message is so critical, the Lord repeats it to Joshua, God's appointed leader, after Moses' death. Let's read this one together. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Moses wants his followers to know as they make their choice, the Lord is at their side and the Lord is on their side. They are not, nor have they ever been, in this alone, and neither are we. So as we close out our time with one of God's greatest leaders and greatest followers, let's accept the same challenge he gave to struggling believers a long time ago who are quite a bit like us. Moses' challenge is to follow God's command, not other gods, to remember your pilgrimage, to fear the Lord, to choose life, and always remember, you're never alone. Listen to Moses' words one more time. This day I call heaven and earth as witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. And that's a powerful proclamation. And that proclamation is made more powerful through what is to come. Moses speaks of choosing life. When Jesus comes along, he says, I am the what? I am the life. Choose me. Choose me. In Romans 10, Paul writes this, brothers, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for the Israelites is that they may be saved. For I can testify about them that they're zealous for God, but their zeal is not based on knowledge. Since they don't know the righteousness of God and sought to establish their own, they did not submit to God's righteousness. Christ is the end of the law, so that there may be righteousness for everyone who believes. In Deuteronomy, you have page after page of rules and regulations and processes and methods imposing on nearly every aspect of daily life. And the Israelites felt buried under the tablets of stone. I mean, who can stand under the pressure to be obedient to all of that law? So Paul writes, Christ is the end of the law, so that there may be righteousness for everyone who believes. So the pressure to obey all of these laws has been absorbed by Jesus. He's our righteousness. Roll on down to verse 8 of Romans 10. But what does it say? The word is near you. Sounds kind of like some of Moses' words. The word is near you. It's in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith we're proclaiming, that if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified, and it's with your mouth that you profess your faith and are saved. As Scripture says, anyone who trusts in the Lord will never be put to shame, for there's no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all, who richly blesses all who call on him. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. So Moses proclaimed to his people, choose life, love God, listen to his voice, hold him closely. Jesus comes along and he proclaims, choose me. I'm the source of life. Believe in me. Confess my name. I'm on your side. I'm fighting for you. I'm carrying you along. Let me be your righteousness. Every day, in so many ways, we have the opportunity to choose Jesus. Sometimes the choice is obvious. Sometimes it's a little more subtle. Maybe it's your day to choose Jesus for the first time. Maybe it's your day to get back on track with choosing Jesus. In your choice, I just want to leave you with Moses' words. Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified or afraid, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Let's stand together and sing.